As David said, this is the start of a three-week series on money. And it does seem customary at this point to start with some humorous comment or joke. So I'd like to just tell you about your role in this. What's going to happen now is that I'm going to tell a joke, and you need to do this. Okay, are we clear now? Right, this is the joke. Okay, did you know Noah was a very shrewd investor? He managed to keep all his stock afloat while everything around him went into liquidation. Thank you. Latest stock market news for you. Helium is up, feathers are down. Paper was stationary, knives were up sharply, pencils lost a few points, hiking equipment was trailing, elevators rose while escalators continued a slow decline. Mining equipment hit rock bottom, nappies remained unchanged, shipping lines stayed on an even keel, balloon prices were inflated, and batteries exploded in an attempt to recharge the market. There's also a few pictures here for you about what the months following are likely to be like. The Queen, I hear, is trying to find a new job. Does one want fries with those? Top Gear, I hear, are downgrading. And the 2012 Olympics is going to be taking on a new format. On a more serious note, though, recent headlines tell us that repossessions have hit a 12-year high, with home buyers losing some 40,000 properties in 2008. 38,000 people aged 18 to 24 were made redundant between October and December last year, and a further quarter redundancies were men over the age of 50. A record number of people in England and Wales were declared bankrupt during the final quarter of 2008, and company liquidations soared to more than 50%. On the other hand, £1 billion in bonuses have been paid to bankers who were bailed out by the taxpayers. Some commentators have asked, is there a moral and spiritual lesson to be learned? The rise of consumerism in the last 50 to 150 years, the effects it has on our way of living, our national and personal debt, our working and family life and our environment have been a cause for concern. The Times last year drew attention to the emotional impact of consumerism on children. Pressures to have the latest designer computers are making children miserable. The Children's Society commented that unless we question our behaviour as a society, we risk creating a generation who are left unfulfilled through chasing an unobtainable lifestyle. There are some 2,300 verses in the Bible about money, wealth and possessions, so I'm told. I didn't actually count them all. Jesus talked about money and wealth more than any other issue, except perhaps the kingdom of God. And in the majority of these, the passages on money and wealth were in terms of salvation and judgment, which suggests that money is a serious matter. So, what is our response? How do we live and witness in the world today? What has God got to say to us and through us? Over the next 3 weeks, we're going to be exploring some of these issues. This week, I'll be offering a challenge to our hearts and suggesting ways that our hearts can be captivated by money. Next week, Ben's going to be talking about managing money, some of the culture and myths. And finally, David's going to be talking about money in difficult times. The aims over the few weeks, then, are to establish some of the principles and approaches to faith and money, to increase awareness on what is shaping our attitudes and behaviour in relation to money, to encourage some critical interaction and understanding of our culture, to dispel myths about money, to equip us to manage money, and to give us opportunity to discuss and get support with issues related to money. And to help us with all this, there's going to be some resources, although I don't think they're available yet on the resource table. The book we'll be working from is this book called Money Revolution by John Preston, which outlines five principles, being that everything belongs to God, the concept of active stewardship, living within your resources, building up treasure in heaven, and giving generously. There's also going to be some resources, and there are, in fact, already resources on the website. If you just type money in to this search box, you should come up with this page. There's a number of websites and books. Okay, then, getting on to this week. I'm going to be offering a challenge to our hearts. I'm going to suggest some of the ways that our hearts can be held captive by money, suggest some of the ways that we might find some more freedom, And throughout it, I want us to remember that God's heart is one of concern and compassion for our different situations. And whilst there may be challenge in what you hear over the next few weeks, the intention is that we work it out together in a supportive environment. So then, three guesses as to what the song is, and nobody that was here early or was at the Vineyard Centre on Friday can answer this question. Three guesses as to what the song is that's going to introduce the series. Money, 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 have a prize. Thank you, Nick, if we could have the clip. Money, money, money then, all the things I could do if I had a little money. I'll start by posing a question. Where are our hearts? When you heard today's topic was going to be money and looked at that video and listened to that music, what sort of responses did you have? And this is not a rhetorical question. If you'd like to just shout out a couple.
Boring.
Boring. Want more.
Frightening.
An illusion. It's a good one. When I did this exercise, within a few minutes, I'd come up with all of these. Guilt, that I had any money when compared to the developing world. Relief, when there was enough money in the bank to pay an unexpected bill. Anxiety, about balancing the books and trying to make ends meet. Freedom, to do what I wanted to do, all the things I could do if I had a little money. Peace, when I had it all sorted out, knew I had enough to last the week or the month or into old age. Esteem, because I had more, or because I was less concerned about money than so-and-so. Greed to have more, and envy that others have more. Regret about how I've spent my money in the past. Insecurities about the future, pension, particularly Christopher, my son. Fear about God's judgment. Fear about poverty. Satisfaction and pride at what I'd accumulated, or what I'd spent, or even what I'd not spent. Self-pity. It's not fair that I can't have this. I've worked just as hard. Power to choose. And bondage, not being able to choose because you're tied to debt. Shame of the mess I make and the way my heart works. Did anyone relate to any of them? A few nodding heads. Some theologians describe the heart as composed of the emotions, the mind, the will and the conscience. Personally, take a little bit more of a holistic view than that, but my journey in respect to money has certainly been about my will, my feelings, my mind, and my conscience, and God's Spirit speaking to my spirit. I've always been a bit hesitant in reading some of the teaching around money and wealth in the Bible. Firstly, some of this I really didn't understand, but also it tended to invoke a lot of fear and guilt, and none of which was very constructive to actually bringing about any change in my life. I like shopping, and my daughter here is here to confirm this. I spend money, whether I have it or not. I don't tend to buy designer stuff or expensive jewellery. It can be a 99p kitchen utensil from Pound Stretcher. It doesn't matter. I've known for a while that my compulsion to shop is not so much about image and status as my need to organise my life, to get everything in order, to have everything where it should be, to save time, to distract me, to be entertained, so-called retail therapy. So I buy more stuff to organise the stuff I already have. For you, perhaps it's gadgets, clothes, music, food. It may not be money at all, but some other area of your life. But in the last 6 months, a couple of instances have drawn me back to looking at this issue of money and spending again. Funnily, none of them were to do with the actual credit crunch. Back in September, I was wandering through Woolworths, now deceased, and I found myself in the gardening section, clutching hold of a blue hosepipe nozzle, seriously thinking about buying it because the one we had at home was yellow, and this blue one would go much better with the blue flower pots and the painted blue fence. I know at this point you think I've probably lost the plot, but I suspect that if we analyse some of the other rationales we have for buying things, it may not be as clear-cut as we'd like to think it is. And by the way, I did not buy the nozzle. Okay. The second incident was when I was wandering through Borders. Yes, another shop. And a book title on the shelf seemed to jump out at me. It was a book called Enough, Breaking Free from the World of More by a guy called John Nash, who writes for the health and lifestyle issues at the Times. And it was like God used that book to say to me, Michelle, enough stuff, enough spending, enough of chasing an illusion, and enough of living like this. Of course, I then bought the book. Next incident was David asking me to do one of these in a series of money. Apart from my initial response, which was, no, not money again, and that's one of the myths Ben is going to deconstruct for us next week, I knew I couldn't talk on the subject with any integrity if I didn't let God speak to my heart again about the root of my spending habits. And this is when I saw clearly how many emotions were all tied up with the issues of money, and I began to see why it was such an important issue. The passion to possess and the compulsion to buy can captivate your heart. And then I got up and went out, and guess what? Went shopping. As a practical step in helping navigate through the money and these issues, Richard Foster suggests that we get in touch with our feelings about money, our fears, our insecurities, guilt, and hence the exercise we did at the beginning. There's also an exhortation to read the gospel accounts of the struggle between faith, poverty, and material idolatry in the lives of those whose paths cross Jesus. In doing so, the primary aim is not to find a set of rules on how to manage your money or wealth, but to accept an invitation to an encounter with Jesus and let the witness of these stories transform you. So with this in mind, I have a little takeaway for you. I need some lovely assistance. Could you hand some of these out? Okay. On one side of the coins, there are what Richard Foster describes as the lighter side of money. On the other side is what he describes as some of the darker issues of money. The idea of the next few weeks is to read some of these passages. Note, there's not 2,300 verses on the card, so you'll be all right. On one side, the Bible talks about how money can be used wisely and reminds us of some of the wealthy characters in the Bible and how they followed God. On the other side, there's some of the verses that give strong cautions about money and lots of injunctions not to be self-satisfied, not to be worried, judgmental or afraid. And that was helpful for me because it implies that the listeners at the time of Jesus also had similar emotions to the ones that we have. So read both sides. It's two sides of the same coin, if you'll excuse the pun. The issue of money is not so much measured by how much we have or don't have, but by the influence it has on our hearts. So my challenge this morning is, where are your hearts, your feelings, your thoughts, your will, your conscience in relation to money? Are you prepared to listen to the challenging witness in the gospel accounts? And will you let God speak to your heart? The answer to the question for me on where was my heart was that my heart was under siege. It was captivated by pretty lights and packages, trying to chase an illusion and to buy a feeling. I am a material girl living in a material world, goes the song, but it was time to stop. Let me read you a passage from Haggai 1, verses 5 to 7, and I felt God was saying this to me. This is what God is saying. Take a good, hard look at your life. Think it over. You've spent a lot of money, but you haven't much to show for it. You keep filling your plates, but never get filled. You keep drinking and drinking and drinking, but you're always thirsty. You put on layer after layer of clothes, but can't get warm. You earn wages only to put them in a purse with holes in it. Consider your ways and set your mind on what has come to you. Consider your ways, your previous and present conduct, and how you have fared. Of course, this links to the theme on strongholds that David introduced at the beginning of the year. So in what ways can our hearts be captivated by money and the things that money can buy? Is it just a matter of lack of self-control, and the solution being just to exert your will more? I'd like to suggest that if money can be a stronghold, it's a little bit more complicated than that and takes a bit more deconstructing. For something to be a stronghold, it usually has strong foundations, something that it's built on and something that maintains it. And I'd like to suggest that some of the foundations and maintainers to the stronghold of money are some of these. Values and beliefs around us, some of our physiological responses, yearning for salvation when our lives are broken, and living in a spiritual vacuum. So looking at the first one, some of our values and beliefs. Materialism, for example, could be encapsulated in this phrase that it's all about success, progress, and possessions being the greatest good and the highest value in life. Consumerism, again, another set of attitudes and values that emphasize the individual and the importance of staying young, the value of newness. Some of the slogans Bigger is better, faster is better, more is better, you can have it all. And Ben will talk about, hopefully a bit more about this next week. We've created a culture that has the overriding message that we don't have what we need to be satisfied, and the idea that we never have enough. And this concept is not new. If you read what the writer of Ecclesiastes says, who's a writer from the Old Testament, says, those who love money never have enough. Those who love wealth are never satisfied with their income. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. This stuff can have a powerful influence on our minds and emotions, and we're being bombarded on a daily basis with an ideology, a way of thinking and feeling in relation to money and possessions through advertising and the media. The values and beliefs around us can captivate our hearts. Another thing that can captivate our hearts, some of you may have seen the film advertised that's come out this week called Confessions of a Shopaholic. I've looked at the trailer and it does present a rather stereotypical view of people that are addicted to shopping as middle-class, white, dizzy women who have nothing better to do. However, some of the studies that have been published on compulsive shopping show that men are as likely as women to be engaged in this type of activity, and that some 1 in 20 adults are actually have problems with things like compulsive spending sprees. Also, it tends to be younger people and people on lower incomes who can perhaps ill afford to do it. The film also suggests that compulsive shopping is a trivial matter, but let me tell you, in terms of the impact it can have on family life and debt, it isn't. On an everyday level, though, when we shop, our brain releases chemicals, a particular chemical called dopamine, which influences our ability to experience pain and pleasure. Simply put, okay, if we do an activity that releases dopamine, we feel good. If we feel good, we're more likely to repeat that behaviour. And the research that they've done on this shows that the anticipation of experience is actually more important than the actual experience, which maybe explains why the whole idea of shopping, window shopping, and actually does quite a bit to the brain and causes us to continue to do that. The next part that I'd like to suggest that can captivate our hearts is a yearning for salvation. Studies have also shown that people with low self-esteem are more likely to impulse spend and buy things that they don't need. We spend to try to fill some gap in our lives, to distract us from unresolved pain or loss, to try to maintain the illusion that everything is all right. This is perhaps why the advice to budget and just stop spending doesn't necessarily change people's behaviour. And what perhaps is more worrying is that consumerism has become a way that people find their identity and their sense of belonging and security. The salvation offered consumers comes through appearance, affluence and financial achievement, and we feel saved or made whole when we appear, or at least think we appear, to be successful and attractive to others. John Nash, who is not a Christian, suggests that our compulsion to buy is perhaps about trying to buy purpose in a deity-free cosmos. He's making a very important spiritual link. Foster describes the characteristics of a deity as one who gives us security, can induce guilt, gives us freedom, gives us power, and seems to be omnipresent. Sound familiar? When we replace God with anything like that, it's called idolatry. So then, our hearts can be captivated by a set of values and beliefs, by physiological responses, by trying to get ourselves whole, and by seeking an alternative God. But let me give you some good news, and this is what I felt God was saying to me. It doesn't have to be like this. Galatians 5:1 says that it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by the yoke of slavery. God does not intend our hearts to be captivated by the love of money, nor does God intend our hearts to stay captivated by the love of money. God's Spirit always cries freedom. So if we're going to pick up some of the principles that is going to be outlaid in the book, The Money Revolution, I suggest that it requires a continuing transformation of our hearts. And I'd like to suggest some of the ways of breaking free. While I'm just introducing them, there's some little cards for you here that have got the principles on and some guides about spending on the back. My willing assistance here. passing around. Thank you. Okay, first of all, open your eyes. Secondly, change your mind. Thirdly, walk in another direction. And fourthly, build up treasure in heaven. So start with open your eyes. In the middle of a passage in Matthew warning the listeners about greed and fear and worry in relation to money, there's a little section that describes the eyes as a lamp to the body. So I'd like us to encourage us to open our eyes. To open our eyes to the culture around us. To open our eyes to the state of our own hearts, our thoughts, our feelings, our conscience. Open our eyes to our behaviour and our spending habits. Let the light in and open your eyes. David introduced the verse earlier in the year from 2 Corinthians 10 verse 5. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. And that's the heart of the next thing, which is changing your mind. And for me, some of the things I needed to change my mind or realign my mind to were these. Firstly, that everything belongs to God. The earth is the Lord and everything in it, says the psalmist. And everything comes from you. And we have given you only what comes from your hand, says 1 Chronicles 29:14. The second way I had to realign my mind was to acknowledge your wealth. And this is something suggested by a guy called Richard Foster in an old golden oldie book called Money, Sex and Power. There perhaps are people here this morning that have lost jobs, and perhaps some are worried about your jobs. Some of us have savings and pensions, and some of us maybe are barely making ends meet on benefits. Some of us have substantial houses, 2 cars, 2 holidays, 2 incomes, but some of us run out of money at the end of the month and switch off the heating for other reasons than saving the planet. And some of us are in debt. But the majority of us are among the 20% richest people in the world who earn more than $7,500, that's about £5,250 a year, and the rest of us are amongst the 60% who earn between £490 and £5,250 a year. None of us are in the 20% of people destitute in the world. This is not to make you feel guilty, but to try to capture an accurate picture of the real situation in the world. We are wealthy. Roger Foster suggests that we do not need to be ashamed of our wealth or to try to hide it from ourselves or others. It's only as we admit our wealth and quit trying to run from it that we're in a position to conquer it and use it for God's purposes. Another way of realigning my mind was to get my head around this notion of enough is enough. And what that meant for me was enough stuff. I really do have enough stuff. Enough of seeking fulfillment and identity through money and possessions, and enough of living like this. Faith requires a psychological and spiritual detachment from material values and consumerist values. As the verse we just said, we take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ. But more than that, I felt God was telling me to start to nurture an attitude that I have more than enough. The idea that small is beautiful, that good things come slowly, we don't even need it all. 2 things that helped me focus on this was a verse in John 14 where Philip says to Jesus, "Lord, show us the Father and that will be enough for us." Another thing that helped me focus on that was a song that we sing in worship sometimes. And talking of Jesus, it says, "All of you is more than enough for all of me." Thirdly then, walking in another direction. This was some practical steps for me. And it included things like leaving my credit card at home, and that was actually harder than you think to do, switching off the one click on Amazon, getting accountable with a house group leader, sorting out a debt plan, doing an online food shop that got delivered so that I avoided the temptation of walking around the supermarkets and putting about 29 things that I didn't need into the basket. And also putting that little card that I just gave you into my purse to remind me of the principles. And finally then, building up treasure in heaven. I wish I had more time to unpack this, and perhaps it could be picked up in house groups. Early Christians seem to have have a habit of picking up some of the Roman slogans and making them their own. So things like "Caesar is Lord" became "Jesus is Lord." And things like "you cannot be saved apart from other name than Caesar" became "you cannot be saved apart from any other name but Jesus." So I want to use some of the words to do with money and use them in a slightly different way. So firstly, I'd like to encourage us to be rich towards God and to spend our lives on God, to invest in the kingdom of God, and to use the currency of the kingdom, love, joy, righteousness, peace, to make daily deposits, i.e. do little things each day, and instead of hoarding, to give. I'm not there yet. And for me, the Christian life is a bit more like a journey than about arriving at a particular place. And our hearts don't become captivated by money suddenly. It's a gradual erosion and a gradual walk out of it. When I was writing this, I could see in my mind's eye an image of a rider on a horse, sword held high in his right hand, a bit like in The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. The impression I got was that this was an image of Jesus. And as the sword moved through the air, it was breaking the chains that captivated us. My mind moved to another image of a second person sitting on the floor with a pair of what seemed like very blunt scissors, trying to cut through bits of string that entangled them. The feeling was that their efforts were rather pathetic in contrast to the rider, and there was some annoyance that the rider didn't just come down and use his sword to cut through the string anyway. But as the person kept cutting, cutting the string, the scissors changed into a knife, and the knife then into a sword. The encouragement was to take simple steps and see what happens. Mustard seeds grow into trees, and seemingly scissors into swords. And finally, just a reminder of God's heart in all this, that the Lord is gracious and compassionate. He is slow to anger and rich in love. The Lord is good to all. His compassion on all he has made.
Okay, thank you, Michelle. Would you like to stand and we'll pray? Let's just ask the Lord to speak to us. Remember the things that Michelle's been saying. Holy Spirit, we invite you to come.